5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 361 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So this episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Tamara S. She is one of our co-producers from Patreon. We appreciate all of our Patreons very, very much. And stay tuned to the end of the show. We'll give you a link and how you can go find out more about Patreon and how to support us there. And don't forget, we still have some spots left on our Pod Abroad 2021 trip. So to find out more about that, you can read about the itinerary, the pricing, everything at podabroad.com. And this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with Chapter 29, entitled Perfectly Fine. And I would like to say that this chapter gets us current with the end of Season 5.
Well, that's funny. I didn't even think about that. That's good to know.
Book 6 into Season 5. The Book 6 that was brought into Season 5 was literally, from what I can remember, the worst parts of Book 6 into Season 5.
Yeah, arguably.
If
not the worst.
Do not argue with me, because if I'm wrong, I don't want to know about it. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I don't want to know more. I like the fact that I don't recall what's happening, which makes read-along for me easier to read, because I don't know what's happening. So when Season 5 brings Book 6 into Season 5, it makes me reading for our read-along harder for me, because I know what's going to happen in those moments, and I hated it, and I hated what they brought forward, so I hated it. I hope that I don't hate what's to come worse than I hate what I've already had to deal with, but let's go. I 100% hope that it's not as bad as what I've already read. I feel like it's going to be worse, because they went this deep a third of the way into the book, less than a third. But the optimist in me hopes that that's as bad as it gets. And I know it's not, but I hope that it is.
So anyone who's watched Netflix's The Haunting of Bly Manor will know what I'm talking about. There's a little girl who has a saying that triggered a memory in me that I didn't know what it was until I reread this chapter for this read-along. She says, "Perfectly splendid." And this chapter's title is what it reminded me of. Perfectly fine.
The children in that series were creepy AF.
Of course they were, especially, yeah, they
100%.
Both were. Yes.
They didn't have to be, but they were. Like, you could have written an entire series where the children were not creepy as the entire time. But the way that they, and I feel like that's part of, Because season one of The Haunting, it was The Haunting season one, right? So they didn't actually call it The Haunting of Bly Manor or The Haunting of whatever they called season one. But season one was just creepy in and of itself.
Season one had a different name. It's The Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, Hill House. I was just called it The Haunting because I didn't care enough. So
I did like Haunting of Bly Manor. I did have some problems with it, not because of the storyline, but because I thought certain things weren't not tested, but like weren't like fleshed out enough, and they could have done a better job with making things more easy to understand, whatever.
Oh, for sure. I was very confused. I was soups confused by multiple episodes of season two.
Season one, I thought was magic. Pure magic. But you don't have to agree. That's okay.
Season one was absolutely magic because there were no expectations, right? Season two, I loved. However, I had many episodes of season two where I had no clue what was happening because they didn't tell us. And it wasn't like, for instance, we didn't realize that the one character, I'm trying to remember her name, was out of time until much later.
Oh, yeah. The housekeeper girl.
Yes, you know what I'm speaking of. So we didn't realize that she was out of time until much later in the series. And we didn't realize many things. But what I will say is that the last episode was so beautiful. It was so beautiful. I loved the last episode.
I thought it was good. I thought it was good. I did like the last episode. I still think maybe the last two episodes, I still think they could have not just the person at a time. That was definitely one thing. But I still think they could have done things even better. And I am no writer. I am no. So I'm definitely not, you know, a professional, but yeah. So the only reason I brought it up was because that little girl said perfectly splendid. And I thought it sounded kind of familiar then, but I never put it together with this chapter. But once we started reading this chapter and I took notes, I'm like, yeah, that is exactly what it reminded me of. So after the massacre, they leave.
What was that?
Massacre.
Say it again.
I just did.
I don't know what that means. Spell it.
Massacre, Summer.
Massacre? Okay. That's not what it sounded like. Go ahead.
I know. It was French. I was doing bad French. So Roger is having, they're not burying anybody. They literally like, you know, killed him and then they're off. Like no burials, no words of consecration, nothing. Because that's how they roll right now.
Did you feel awful for him?
Roger?
Roger. Yeah. I feel like Roger is the ultimate victim in this whole thing. Because he's not from this time period, but he is being forced to be an Ian. Forced to be a Fergus, forced to be a Jamie in a period where he is not, and he was never raised to be that. And I felt bad for him being forced to fulfill a bargain that his psyche was not part of.
Yeah, definitely. Roger is having an inner conflict with this. It wasn't a problem for Jamie, though. He's good. Diana's description here is beautiful and heartbreaking. Quote, he'd led her through the morning light in that clearing, a blood-soaked Adam, a battered Eve, looking upon the knowledge of good and evil, unquote. So they make their way to the stream where Claire washes herself and resets her own nose.
That was awful.
Yes, it was. Guess who else is there whom maybe I did not rage read it like Summer did, but maybe I went through too quickly. I didn't notice this name in the last chapter. I think I would have. But guess who else is there we hear in this chapter? Thomas freaking Christie.
Yeah, I don't recall that at all. I just recall this whole thing being third person. And when it goes third person, I assume it's Roger or Bree. And since Bree wasn't there, it was clearly Roger. I did not recall Thomas Christie. Please tell me again how Thomas Christie was part of this.
He just was. He was there as one of the dudes. He was with Jamie.
I don't recall any of that. Okay. You're going to make me reading this again?
Not right now. On your own time.
I hate you, Ginger.
So I don't think it was
Kenny Lindsay.
Oh, I don't even remember that. See, I didn't write that down.
You're awful.
I don't think that was made clear in the last chapter. That's all I'm saying. So Roger goes to Jamie. While Claire's doing her business down by the stream.
Fixing it, setting her own nose.
Yes, and wiping out her vagine.
Wiping out? Shame on you.
No.
She was literally like She was literally herself. Like hunching over a river. She did not at any point in time try to clean out her vagine. If it got cleaned out.
Summer, she did. She was naked.
Naked does not mean she's actively cleaning out her vagina. Naked at the river means she's naked at the river. It does not mean she was literally.
She's cleaning up.
Girl, I'm going to go back through this chapter and try to find a passage that says Claire was cleaning her vagina out into the river. And I don't recall that actually happening.
You can report back next time. So Jamie asks Roger about Jem. How would Roger feel? Would he feel the same way about his son if he knew for sure he wasn't his own?
The most important thing that happened before this scene that you're about to speak about was that Archbug had approached Roger. And they were speaking about something else, and Roger was trying to dissociate himself from this moment. And then all of a sudden, Bug interrupted himself to say himself wants your presence. You're being asked for. And he's like, wait, what? And he goes there having no idea of what's happening. And in that moment, he goes there. And then the first thing that Jamie says is, tell me that you would not think differently of your son. Tell me how it was. He didn't go over there because of anything Jamie said. He went over there because Jamie looked at him in a way that Archbug said, you need to go there. You have been called. But to me, that's totally different than Roger just sitting there having thoughts and then going over to Jamie. Jamie looked at Roger from across the glade or wherever they are in such a way that Archbug knew.
However he got there, he got there. And Jamie wants to know from Roger, because that's the reason that's what he's asking Roger. Would you feel the same if you knew for sure Jem was not your own?
Yeah, to be fair, I didn't even think about that personally until that moment in the book, because I moved on with that fact.
And right now, that's all we get. Like we get the rest of that conversation later on in the chapter. So there's that setting up that question. And Jamie tells Roger, Claire might be with child after this night. He said there's a day or two when he might be able to create doubt for them both. And so that is why he's asking Roger, like, would you feel the same if you knew for sure he wasn't your own? Is having doubt enough? And what kind of, he's not going to say, what would you do in my situation? But he wants to hear from Roger, who has been in a similar situation, like a very similar situation, right? His wife was raped. And there was the commingling of sperm like 2 days separately in the book.
You're not wrong. And I hate that this is an ongoing conversation we have to have in this series, because you would think that we should only have to have this conversation once, but I feel like we've had it at least three times. So this is the first time that our characters have had an active choice. So I will give you that. Up until this point, Brianna was separate. When that happened, when Jamie got raped, it didn't matter because he doesn't have any eggs inside of his butt. And Brianna, by the time we even knew it was a thing, was long gone. Yeah, nobody had a choice to have thoughts about it. And Roger got there first. 100%. Hashtag. If I have a shirt, Roger got there first.
Lee M. writes, Jamie seeks out Roger to ask him how it is with him. Is it better to have doubt than to know that Jemmy is not from his blood? We observe Claire's otherworldliness from Roger's POV. She is 57 years old at this point, and she appears to be much younger. The fact that anyone is even concerned about a 57-year-old falling pregnant is pretty crazy. She is a physician, yes, but she also has some kind of preternatural healing abilities with the touch of her hands, like whatever the hell she did with Jamie when he was dying from the snake bite in The Fiery Cross. And I think she means the TV show. Much like Master Raymond. Claire is able to compartmentalize her thoughts and emotions. It is what makes her a good healer. She can do what needs to be done to effect healing, even if what needs to be done is pretty brutal. I think this ability to compartmentalize is, at least in part, why the show had Claire go to her happy place in the dissociative state during the rape. However, in this scene, we aren't given access to Claire's POV. It is all from Roger's. This is an interesting choice for a narrative that is told mostly from her POV throughout the series. Claire's brutalization reminds Roger of his own trauma. He reaches up and touches the rope scar at his own neck. Coming out of his daze, Roger takes his place at Jamie's right side, at his Laird's weaker side. Sorry, but pretty awkward moment to be watching your mother-in-law naked. Awkward. And Liam goes on to write, I do find it pretty darn interesting that she is having a pregnancy scare at 57. That is considered to be an advanced age to have not gone through menopause. I even did a little research. Fun fact number one from WebMD, the age at menopause is often determined by how old your mother was. Claire does not have this information. Also from my research, I'm shocked that this is still an issue. She was skipping periods and hot flashing way back in the Fiery Cross. She really should be about done 3 years later. Fun fact number two. Quote, research findings suggest that later age at menopause and longer reproductive lifespan may result in longer life expectancy. Even though women who reach menopause later are at a higher risk for breast, uterine, and ovarian cancers, women who go through menopause late are at a lower risk for heart disease and stroke. Unquote. And that is from obermeyer.info. We'll include that link in the show notes. Leanne continues, this could bode well for Claire. She is going to be a white-haired, powerful, wise woman for a good long time. And in the end, it does seem highly unlikely to me that Claire could really be pregnant. What gives, Jamie? They'd taken Lionel Brown with them. So they hadn't killed everybody.
And he's not dead by the time this chapter's done. No, much as I wish he were. And I'm saying this right now, having not
read ahead.
Remembered how this book goes because I have not read ahead. I secretly, desperately wish that this book followed the series because I would love nothing more than Marcelly to kill Lionel Brown so hard with whatever the fuck was available in the surgery.
I think you just might like it, even if it's not the same way. But I think you might like it.
I don't think you're wrong. But right now, with my recollection of season 5, I can't imagine anything better than Marcelly murdering Lionel Brown with impudence and whatever the fuck was on hand.
This Lionel Brown, who was not dead, was conveniently pretending to be asleep he wasn't pretending to be dead. They knew he was awake. They knew he was alive. But he was only alive because Archbug had stopped Ian from killing him. He thought Jamie would have questions. So leaving one of the people, alive to answer such questions just made sense.
I don't hate that reasoning. I hate that he's still alive right now in this chapter. But I don't hate the reasoning because somebody should answer for it. And I feel like he's just enough of an a-hole to deserve to answer for all of the pain. And I hope he answers in a way he didn't deserve. I hope he answers for it in a way, in a deeper way than he deserves.
We'll have to find out.
I know maybe he didn't deserve it that way, but I hope. He had to answer to it in a way that he had not physically earned himself.
They make their way home. Jamie doesn't let Claire near Brown. Claire, not that she's gagging for it, but Claire, being the healer she is, has a natural inclination to want to triage and help people to help to heal them. And even though she already did, triage with him, Jamie's like, yeah, no.
No, the closer they got to home, the more they were like, nope, you're good. They didn't let her anywhere near him.
Nope. And once they got there, Mrs. Bug takes charge of Brown. Now, Jamie, we learn, as we already knew this part.
Everyone who wasn't part of the first person narrative of this chapter, they were all not aware of the fact that Mrs. Bug would also want these people to be quote-unquote dead. Like, Mrs. Bug is not a sympathetic character. She's not there to put anybody outside of their own misery. Mrs. Bug is probably worse than Arch. And worse is the wrong adjective. But she's 100% more than Arch. I'm just saying, I'm like, you create this moment where she is the savior and she's not.
That's interesting. We'll have to follow that. We'll have to follow that, definitely.
And I love that she's not. In this moment and in this chapter, I love that she's not. Because we needed somebody to be bigger and deeper than Jamie. Bigger and deeper than poor Claire, who is still too traumatized to do anything past that. And Arch, who requires a little more guidance, maybe, than Merdina. And I feel like Mrs. Bug is the superhero we all need for this moment.
So Jamie wishes him kept alive, and so he would be. And Mrs. Bug is in charge of that. So Bree, once they learned that they're back, Bree had gone to her mother the moment she learned she was safe. And Roger goes to see Jem.
For sure, Roger sent her up to the big house. And I feel like, as much as the series has discounted Roger and discounted his interactions and thoughts and whatever, and as much as they have also discounted his throat injuries in the way that they've just decided to not have him try to have a throat injury, I enjoy every time they allow Roger to be a sympathetic father. And in this instance, it was him coming home and sending Brianna to the big house, knowing that because he knew that Roger had already asked him about the eventuality of potentially raising a child who is not your own. So he sent him off knowing Roger asking Jamie about it and him sending him off. And then he knew sending him off that at some point, knowing that the whole conversation had taken place, that Jamie would be sending his wife home to him before too long, because for Jamie to have sex with Claire tonight to potentially create an existence in which his seed could have been the thing that created a baby if Claire was in fact pregnant from her rape. So knowing that that was an eventuality, he knew that potentially Brianna would be sent home faster than potentially she could have been, just based upon her own rough-handedness in this instance. So there was a lot of things happening in this chapter.
And we're not done. Roger goes to see Jem, needing to connect with him. And he picks him up and he says, Daddy's here. So he's got a lot, as Summer alluded to, he's got a lot of feelings, not just about his conversation with Jamie, but about, you know, just what he had done and been part of that killing spree, and his own, maybe not oath, but his own internal compass. And I think it was in the last chapter. Maybe it was in this chapter. One of the last chapter of this chapter, where it's mentioned that Roger had spent, you know, had gone many times with the Reverend to be at someone's deathbed or with a family to help ease their suffering. So Roger is used to being a help in those moments, not being the cause of those moments. So Roger's got a lot of internal stuff going on. Liam writes, returning from his thoughts of the previous night's work to the cabin, Roger is having all the feels and needs to hold his sleeping son. This reminds me of how Jamie poured out his soul to Jenny's baby, Caitlin, after the loss of his and Claire's own child when they returned to Lallybroch to heal in Dragonfly. Roger wonders about his own father. Does Roger remember him? He'd finally, and as I said, we learned the end of that conversation that began between the two of them at the river. He'd finally told Jamie, if there's room for doubt for you, take it. So we're with Claire and Bree. Claire tells Bree the title. I'm fine, perfectly fine. Sure. So she helps her bathe. That is one thing that Claire said would be great. She's not hungry. She's not thirsty. She is tired, but a bath, she said, would sounded wonderful. So Bree is humming Mr. Tambourine Man as Claire is in the bath, and Claire is shocked into awareness.
Do you feel like Mr. Tambourine Man has been given enough personal credit as Never My Love was with the chapter because it was so prevalent for that literally the entire episode? So do you feel like if they had done Never My Love episode as Tambourine Man, that you would feel like it had been given the credence it deserved? The chapter says that Bree was humming, "Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me." And the show bypassed that for a completely different 60s song, which was the Never My Love song, which has haunted me ever since they made it the focal point of that episode. So what I'm saying is, do you personally see that you could have felt as deeply about Tambourine Man as you did about Never My Love?
Their two songs are so different. Mr. Tambourine Man would not have fit in the same way the other one would have for the show.
But what if they'd tried? What do you think would have happened?
I can't even go there because it doesn't fit. Now, what was funny when you paused me was I never thought about it until literally just now. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, I know it's not a tambourine, but that made me think of the Bodhran.
Girl, for sure. I never even thought about this song until today when I was reading the chapter again, because I've told you specifically, I don't recall this book as deeply as I do the rest.
So as Claire is in the bathtub, wherever she is, and Bree is humming Mr. Tambourine Man, Claire is shocked into awareness, as I said. And she remembers immediately the time traveler. She remembers Donner. And she remembers Jamie, who had taken her through the bodies because he wanted her to see they were dead. So she did not have any doubt at any time in the future or any worry that that someone might come, you know, to try and find her. That she didn't have to worry about anything in the future. Short of, you know, healing from the trauma. But Donner, we find out now, was not among them. That's a setup, potentially. Lee M. writes, "The lyrics make this an interesting song choice." Of course, Tambourine Man, written by Bob Dylan, 1964. So I'm just going to read a few of the lyrics that Lee M. Included from the song that seem to lend themselves well to the Outlander sphere, if you will. "Though I know that evening's empire has returned into sand, vanished from my hand, left me blindly here to stand, but still not sleeping. My weariness amazes me. I'm branded on my feet. I have no one to meet, and the ancient empty streets too dead for dreaming. Take me on a trip upon your magic swirling ship. My senses have been stripped. My hands can't feel to grip. My toes too numb to step. Wait only on my boot heels to be wandering. I'm ready to go anywhere. I'm ready for to fade into my own parade. Cast your dancing spell my way. I promise to go under it. And take me disappearing through the smoke rings of my mind, down the foggy ruins of time, far past the frozen leaves, the haunted, frightened trees. Out to the windy beach, far from the twisted reach of crazy sorrow. Yes, to dance beneath the diamond sky, with one hand waving free, silhouetted by the sea, circled by the circus sands, with all memory and fate driven deep beneath the waves. Let me forget about today until tomorrow." So Jamie tells Bree, go home. It's a lot longer. I'm trying to, you know, truncate this. Jamie tells Bree, go home and take care of Roger. He needs you.
For sure.
And Claire tells Jamie he shouldn't worry about her. Quote, "I'm not traumatized or anything of that sort." Unquote. Oh, my goodness, Claire.
Too late.
"She's okay," she says. "Just shaken." He flexes his hands. And I don't know if they pop or what, but her seeing that, she rehears the snapping of Hodgepile's vertebrae and she shoves a towel into her mouth. And that can only mean she's trying not to scream.
To be fair, having read this again only recently,
And I mean, and then in the last 24 hours, from the first time I read this, which was years ago, I do not recall Jamie separating Hodgepile from his head from the rest of his body until I reread this chapter literally today. So that's a lot. I promise you it was not also part of the Stars series season 5. So it was a lot to digest, a lot to experience, and just a lot to be a reluctant part of, if that makes any sense. It's one thing to read people's revenge on a character being egregiously assaulted, but being egregiously assaulted and a character having his head ripped from his body internally, clearly not from the outside, but ripped from his body internally, was a lot to read perfectly in as a separate entity.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was gross. He reminds her, Jamie does, that he's also been raped. Quote, "And you say I must not worry for you?"
I hate that. I hate what you're saying. I hate that what you're saying, because after he said that, she literally spent the next 2/3 of the chapter reminding him that he'd been raped and she didn't want him to feel anything about it. And she didn't want to remind him of those moments. And she didn't want to have anything to do with his personal instances about these moments. Like, I dislike that you're trying to push this off for a few moments. She did not want to remind him.
She is insistent that she's not traumatized or any of the sort. I'm just shaken. And then she freaks the freak out when he flexes his hands and shoves a towel into her mouth. And he's like, "Girl, you are not tricking anyone here." He reminds her, like, "Look, Claire, I've been raped too." Quote, "And you say I must not worry for you?" And that angers her.
And I feel bad for both of them. I feel bad for both of them, because even later in this chapter, she's like, "Dude, your experience is not my experience. And I can't speak to what you happened with, but what I happened with was different. And it doesn't make it less than." And that's what, for me personally,
neither of them said it was less than.
I know. I'm saying this for me. I have personally experienced being not taken advantage of, personally was abused in a way that was less than physical rape. Personally, I have been. And while what I experienced, I would never say is on par with somebody who has been physically raped, both on Claire and or Jamie's level, I would say that I don't consider what happened to me less than. And so when I read and I listen to these chapters, and I'm trying, especially with Claire in this chapter, because she recognizes that what happened to her was not what happened to Jamie. It doesn't make it less than, and it shouldn't, but it was 100% a very different experience. Given the fact that she was like, they were just men. They weren't sadists. They weren't people trying to mentally hurt you and finding joy from that. They were, and for her personal experience, they were men. They were just men. And I'm not trying to say that anything that I experienced was less or more, definitely not more than those things, and definitely not less than those things. But what I am saying is that I can feel for her in these moments, because when you haven't experienced an assault as deeply as somebody else that you love, and you're trying to be like, "I understand what happened for you was," and "what happened for me was," but I'm not trying to say that my is the same as your, but we were clearly experiencing. I feel like I understand both Brianna's experience talking to Roger about it and Claire and her experience talking to Jamie about it, because she knows as what she went through, it was different. Not better, not worse, not the same, but different and still. So all I'm trying to say is that reading these chapters was difficult because I can see how all of the different characters have been assaulted and abused, but they're not assaulted and abused in the same ways, in ways that make them feel like they are deserving of being commiserate, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense.
I'm sorry. I feel like I talked for like 30 minutes longer than I needed to, but I was trying to find the right words.
You were trying to get it out. It's okay. You were trying to get it out. So let me go back a little bit, because it basically is kind of saying what you're saying. So Jamie reminds her, after she freaks out with a towel in her mouth, that he's been raped. Quote, "And you say I must not worry for you?" And that angers her. There she is in her suffering, feeling guilty that he's thinking of his experience. And it makes her angry that she's feeling guilty. Quote, "I don't want you to have to think about that again. I don't." She would love it if it had, you know, not come up, if it could be better left forgotten. His reply, "You think I forgot any of it?" Of course she doesn't think that, but she wanted him to forget. So she's wondering if she should tell him about Donner, meaning the time traveler. Instead, she asks about Roger and Ian and Fergus. She assures him that she'll heal, and he goes on about her poor face. And then he says he'll not lie with her and be unable to look at her in the face. And she's all, "The fuck? Excuse me? Who's talking about lying with anybody? I don't know. What are you talking about? Where are you going with this?" And he says, "Well, it seems necessary." "Excuse me?" And then she apologizes. She then asks him what he meant by necessary, and he reminds her she might be with child. Now, the chance was remote, but it was there. But she says they can't. She could have been exposed to some SED. SED, I'm making up words now. STD or STI, they're called now. I'm not wrong. That's gross. So they can't really control a potential pregnancy. They can control to the furthest extent that is possible, right? Through Claire's ability, they can control whether or not she has now or will be developing an STI. And because, yeah, they plan to do the dirty, they give it to him. So, yeah.
Ginger.
What?
You're not wrong. They can 100% control whether or not she has an STI, but the STI is really not the moment.
No, of course not.
That is not the meaning behind all the moments. So the reason that they're even doing anything that could cause Jamie to get an STI is that they're trying to give them a moment where they can have a reason to believe that there's a chance that somebody other than the rapists can be the father to the potential children in Claire's body.
She says, okay, the chance was remote, but it was there. But we can't do anything because I could have been exposed to an STI. Wait a second. We need penicillin. She goes immediately to the surgery.
I love it.
And he's like, now? And she's like, yes, bloody now.
He's like, you're going to give us all shots. Yes, now, but Jamie's like, no, then you get a shot and I get a shot. Everyone gets shots. So nobody gets to say who is more protected from whatever infections you may or may not have.
So then he insists she do him first and then he does her. And then they don't actually do it yet, but they go to get ready to take care of the rest of it. As they're walking around, as So brushes past her, he brought her a present. And that makes her think, I don't think that's not the cause, because it would have happened no matter what. But Jamie says, yeah, I refuse to do this sober. So they set out to get some drinkies on.
I loved that.
Me too.
I loved it a lot. I loved it a lot. I loved it so much.
So Bree returns to Roger. He awakes and she feeds him. And she relays that Claire is perfectly fine. And I'm pretty sure she says it sarcastically. Roger is, of course, still a little out of sorts after the rescue. And he's thinking of how it would be for Jamie. He was amazed at taking that type of risk, meaning to lie with someone, quote, with a woman so shocked and brutalized. His heart and soul troubled, he asked her.
That's only because Roger did it in the reverse. He had the exact same situation, but in the opposite order.
He did not sleep with someone who was raped.
He won't understand it. He did.
No,
you're she right. Had it. He didn't because someone was raped after he slept with her.
Brianna, he asks, will you hear me? He needs her to listen. And he says, quote, tell me I've done right, unquote. So around this time in the chapter, maybe I think a few paragraphs or the paragraph just before, he talked about how people of his faith, Presbyterians, don't really go to confession and certainly don't kneel, but that Catholics do. And so he knew she would understand because he felt the need to confess, to be shriven. And so she says to him that he doesn't have to say anything, but he says he does. And he asks her to put out the candle. Confession then takes place going forward. Maybe we hear more in the next chapter. I don't know. I didn't read ahead. But if it does take place, it takes place there in the darkness. We are back with Jamie and Claire. He brought the alcohol. She felt both alien about having him near her as well as lustful. So she felt a few ways. They drink their wine and pretty quickly get on to the second cup. She asks him how he broke his nose. So kind of, you know, not dull the time, but she knows she's going to need a little more than a cup or two of wine. And so will he. But she's trying to also not be just like, you know, down everything. So have a little bit of, you know, maybe not light, but a little bit of conversation. So he says it had been a few minutes after she left him to go through the stones. She's wondering out loud if she'll tell him everything. And she says, I think I have to. And but not now. So she's not going to do it right now. But she does think that she'll have to tell him everything that happened there in the glade with the abduction. So Jamie tells her the story of how his nose was broken. This is time travel in and of itself. So she's taken back to the moments after she left him initially. What he was going through right after that. He didn't care, right? She was gone. Remember, he'd intended to die at Culloden, period. So him dying here wasn't really any great difference. But, you know, if he could actually get to Culloden, you know, that was where his aim was. So he had clubbed. He clubbed both of these English, I don't know, they're officers, but English soldiers anyway, to death with one of their muskets. As she hears this, she drinks more. So what drives her bonkers is that she could have been anyone for those men. She says, quote, I was no more than a hole to them, unquote.
You're making this more about her, and she wasn't trying to make this about her. She was saying that what she experienced was not the same as Jamie, and she was trying to make herself smaller and her experience smaller in relationship to what Jamie experienced, which was very personal and very pointed at him personally. So it's not just that it was a different experience than what Blackjack put on Jamie. It was that what Blackjack put on Jamie was personal and what was put on her was not. And I think that's an important...
It is a very important point. So I wasn't... So just because she thinks that, or she has the thought, or the worst part of it was not necessarily what happened, but the fact that I could have been anyone, right? I was just a hole to them. That her saying that or feeling that has absolutely nothing to do with Jamie. So I don't disagree. She was definitely trying, I don't know about making herself small, but she wasn't trying to compare them.
No, it was maybe not making herself small, but she was trying to acknowledge. And this is something, and to be fair, and this is something that women do every day.
For every many.
In everything that women do.
Yes, correct.
for everything is that we are trained and we are taught that our experiences are not the same as what men experience and are not the same as what other people who have had the same experience have. What I'm saying is that we are taught so deeply that what we experience is not more than anyone else. And that is, and it's not that what happened to us wasn't awful, but we are constantly taught that whatever happens to us is clearly not as bad as something that could happen or did happen to anyone else. And so we constantly try to explain away the awful things that we experience as not being as bad as. And that's what Claire is doing in this moment.
Yes, and that is absolutely a factor, is not the word, a symptom, maybe? Or maybe there's a better word of, and I know the word, when I say this word, it's gonna, you're gonna be like, maybe not you, Summer, but some people listening may be like, wait, what? That's not happening here. The problem is, it is. So when you try and, not belittle yourself, but when you try and, you know, when you say something like, oh, well, I went through this, but I know it was not as bad as what that person did. Okay, the second you try and compare two things of different people, of different experiences, of whatever, guess what you've just done? Whether you mean to or not, the moment you use any comparative language, right? Better than, less than, not like, not as bad as, whatever. The moment you use any kind of comparative language, what have you done? You have turned this into, whether you meant to or not, and I don't think anyone means to, but your words turn this into a competition. And it is never a competition. Yeah. Trauma is not competition.
And that's what's so hard to read in this book is that, and you can even see it in Claire, that she's not competing. And she's like, the things I'm feeling and the things that I have experienced are not in competition with what you've done. But she was making herself smaller to account for Jamie's afflictions.
Yes, she's angry. She's absolutely not trying to compare, or sorry, trying to compete. But what makes her angry is that she's angry at, maybe not herself, but she's angry that she feels.
Well, she's angry that she should have to. She's angry that she should have to, but she's also sad that she should have to. Because when she was trying to explain how violated she was and how awful the experience she had was, she couldn't find a way to explain it to Jamie in a way that didn't belittle his own rape. And that was awful.
But not even just belittle it, but that didn't bring up his own. She didn't want him to remember.
You're not wrong. And that's terrible for somebody to not be able to fully feel what happened to them, to fully feel what happened to them because they're so concerned about how that will affect someone else. And you can hear me affected, but I'm affected right now.
Just a little.
Because I can see that. Because I can see that. And I felt it so deeply when I read this chapter is that I was just like, she should be able to feel what just happened to her, like in the last chapter, like less than 15 minutes ago, right? It was 15 minutes before I moved on to the next one. But it's just the point that that should be able to exist in its own.
Yes, she should not have to worry about his feelings when she's trying to count through, even mentally make it through her own. In a perfect world, no one would have to worry about anyone else's trauma while they're trying to just barely walk through their own.
All of that. 100% true. And that's my point. Ugh.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's a professional counseling done securely online.
There is a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log in to your account anytime, anywhere, and send a message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. Visit betterhelp.com/outlander. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. And as a special offer for Outlander podcast listeners, get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/outlander.
One of the things, there's more than one thing, but one of the things that drives her bonkers, of course she doesn't like the fact that she was beaten, stabbed, abducted, like raped. She doesn't like any of it. She's traumatized because of all of it. But now that she's, you know, safe, away from everything, and safe and with Jamie and home, what comes out is, it's not funny, but what comes out is it's almost like your logic speaking. Like, so your body can't, you can't get to logic, you know, or at least I guess full-fledged logic until you are safer, right? Because you're in the fight or flight mode or freeze, flight, fight or freeze in the middle of it, or you're flat out dissociated, right? So you're just trying to survive. Once you're safe and you know you're safe and your body believes you're safe, yes, you're going to have to work through the trauma. But once she's able to slightly, you know, again, sphincter relaxes a little bit, she has this thought: I was no more than a hold to them. No, that is not the worst part of it. But it's this rationalization that, yeah, all of this stuff was bad. But, and so she was not trying to say, just like you said, she was not trying to say that just because I could have been any hole, the fact that Jamie was the one specific hole, it doesn't make it better or worse. She's just saying, for her experience only, she's not even thinking about Jamie. But when she says it, Jamie says in shock, "You think that was better?" Meaning him with BJR. And she's like, no, it's not that, not at all. But she's like, it's just these men and these nasty little appendages.
No, but it's personal. And that's the thing. See, she can't win, Ginger. She can't win. Because even when she is trying to allow for the fact that she remembers how awful Jamie's tragedy and his experiences were, it's like there's no winning, because even when she tries to account for and lessen her own experience based upon what she recalls his experience to be, there's no winning. Like, there's no moment where it's better. I mean, there's no one's trying to compete. And that's her whole point, is that Claire is just like, this is not me trying to compete. This is just, you know, I want you to know that what she envisions and her expectation of her own experience was different than his. And even she is trying from the beginning of this experience to negate the importance of it. You know, she's just like,
maybe not negate it, but to almost smooth it, to make sure to protect Jamie and his ego. Not because Jamie is being an asshole. He's not.
No, you're not wrong. And that's the thing that makes it so hard, is that he's not actively trying to do any of these things. But I'm personally upset on his behalf, because he's not trying to do that. And she's just like, I get it. What I just experienced was disassociative, because it wasn't about me. I was just a hole. Whereas he's like, well, clearly BJR just wanted my physical hole, as opposed to just being a hole.
This is going to sound really bad, because it is not the same topic at all. But here where she says, oh, no, it's not. meaning the subject matter. So she's like, I could have mattered less, right? I could not have mattered less. I was nothing more than a hold of them. And Jamie, again, she's not trying to compare or to compete. And I like you said, I don't think he thinks that she's trying to compete, but he, from his own experience, is like, just the fact that he asked, and I don't blame him, but just the fact that he opened his mouth and said, you think being the one hole they do want is better? Even though he wasn't trying to, and no, he's definitely not trying to one-up her, not at all. As a trauma victim himself, it is so much here. But anyway, content aside, so they're talking about two different traumatic experiences, right? You and I can have a conversation about anything, not trauma-related, anything. And I'll say, or you'll say, it doesn't matter who, but one of us will say something about, oh, well, I did the XYZ or whatever. And the other one will say, and you think that was, you know, maybe not easier, but whatever. And you didn't think that was X, or you didn't think that was whatever. My point is, this is unfortunately very human. It's just incredibly, it makes it even sadder. While they're not comparing, they're not competing. That is not the intent. That's what it looks like from the outside, because it's just so sad. There's so many things. We've already hit all the points, but this thing they're doing, again, trauma aside, which makes it even worse and even harder to read about and even sadder. I think this is just something humans do, unfortunately. Someone will say something, and like, I got a new sweater today. Actually, maybe that's a very good way of putting it. I went shopping at the store and I got this great new sweater. It's blue and blah, 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 blah. And rather than saying, oh, that's nice, you know, where'd you get it? How much did it cost? You know, ask, you know, trying to have a carry a conversation, right? Carry on that conversation. That would be like the best way to continue something. Whereas if someone said the same thing and said, oh, I got the sweater today, it's blue, it has this, and da 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 da, and just talked about how much they liked it, rather than saying something, contributing, or asking a question to continue that conversation, if someone to that said, well, I got one I got one last year at the same store. It was on sale, and it was like designer, and it was just like basically saying it was much better. Now, I know that's not what they're doing. That's not what they're doing at all. But I think it's a very human thing, unfortunately, that sometimes when someone says something, again, this is content aside, this is not trauma related, I'm just saying a kind of regular conversation, it's very easy to, I don't want to say easy to feel triggered, because that's not good. But here, it's absolutely, and I here and in other non-trauma related conversations, it's not necessarily, the goal is not necessarily to compete. But unfortunately, that's kind of sometimes what happens. So she has her little, quote, nasty little appendages speech. She was like, I survived a war, I survived this, and da 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 da. And at the end of the day, I was just a hole when these nasty little appendages, men, blah. To this, Jamie seems a little taken aback. He's like, whoa, that's like, wow, that's dramatic. And then she's, again, and this kind of makes me sad too, because now she, the one who has been traumatized, is feeling like she has to coddle him. Not that he never asked for it. It just makes me so sad and so not happy. And she'll, and at his being taken aback, she kind of crumbles a little bit and says, oh, but not yours. I'm rather fond of yours. And then she feels guilty that they're dead, the people who abused her and tried to kill her. She feels guilty that they're dead now because of her. And he corrects her and says, no, because of me.
Right. He's not wrong, but he never took it on himself when it happened. Like, when the whole moment happened and Archbug was like, what do you want us to do? Should we kill these people? And everyone stepped in and said, no, she made an oath. I kill for her. That was the French one at the end. The whole point is that everyone stepped up and said, I do this thing for her. Yeah. And yet at the end of the day, she still internally has to account for it.
Yeah, because exactly. Jamie may have done it and the other men may have done it, but it was on her behalf. If she had not been abducted, they would not have to come rescue her and then kill other people and then now have this stain on their soul, whatever.
It's exactly right. And it's like, They verbally kind of tried to absolve her of it to make themselves feel better for what they were about to do on her behalf. But at the end of the day, they were choosing to make those choices, but they made it verbally for her to carry with her. So now she feels like I made these vows, the Hippocratic oaths, all these oaths, and I've made them. And because of these oaths, everyone else is killing people for me because I've made these oaths. So other people making the oaths on her behalf probably just makes her feel more responsible for them because she is a healer who other people have been killing people in her name because she's a quote unquote healer. So I don't know that that was really on her behalf more than it was for their own behalf. If that makes sense.
Yeah. It's a lot. You're right, though. There are so, this entire chapter, she's doing that. And there are so many layers to this. And then you bring in Jamie's own trauma. Oh, Lord have mercy. It's a lot. It's a very dense chapter.
It's so layered. And I liked this chapter more than the last one. as deeply as I could say about that. Because this chapter gave, I knew going into this
there
chapter
was no
that
rape.
This was the path out of yes. the crevasse. No, shut up. This brought me to the end of season five on Stars. So now I can read this book without 100% forethought into what I know is going to happen. So I'm super looking forward to the rest of this book.
There's plenty of bad things left.
Oh, I believe you. But don't give me any hints because I don't need them.
I'm not.
Because I've read enough Diana Gabaldon books to be able to create awareness. So I'm looking forward to what's to come in the rest of book six.
So they get down to it. He means to be gentle. But she would have nothing of it.
Even he said it. I should have gotten her drunk because she gets a little randy when she's drunk. He said that. Really?
So later, they feel drops of water. So the roof's leaking. They don't really go anywhere with that. But I think it's just to bring us back to kind of real life. And there's still work to be done. He asks her how she feels. And she says she feels safe. Now that, I think, is also in season five.
Before you end quote yourself, can we speak about the fact that during season five, when they were showing all of Claire's disassociative moments, where she's having, you know, Thanksgiving with everyone at her 70s home, that the ceiling started to drip water. So there was a leak in her roof. In
That's
the
true.
60s. So it's not just the moment of taking her back to the... Yeah, it's not just the book, but it was them adapting the book in a way that they were trying to incorporate all the moments. And that was a thing that was taking her out of her dissociative moment where she's just like, I'm living in the 60s, I'm hearing this song, we're all having Thanksgiving, as opposed to Claire in the 1700s, where she's out in the elements, potentially, you know, working towards, and part of being raped, not being raped, but all of the time she was being held captive. Like, it wasn't just the actual rape moments, it was all of it. But that in her dissociative moments, there was the ceiling leaking. That happened in season five. That's all I'm saying. It was just, I find it so interesting the moments they decided to bring forward. Like not just storyline they brought forward, but the moments. And that was, again, nothing I thought about until I reread the chapter this week because I read it once.
Now this made me, I don't think this was in the show. But I did really like it. It's very sad, but I understood it and I did like it as storyline ish or as character description. So after they do that and she says she feels safe, after she falls asleep, quote, then he cried.
Oh, yeah, that was not part of this season because the whole season ended with her saying she felt safe while being naked in their bed while it was raining outside. So that was not where we left the season off with her. She did say safe. She 100% did say she felt safe, but it was not the same safety of this chapter.
Yeah. And so, quote, then he cried, soundless, muscles strained to aching, that he might not shake with it, that she might not wake to know it. He wept to emptiness and ragged breath, the pillow wet beneath his face. Then her hands rose and rested on him, the tears cool on his face, congealing, the white of her clean as the silent snow that covers char and blood and breathes peace upon the world, unquote. Now from that, I at least saw so much God imagery there. So breathing upon the world, the white of her clean as the silent snow, her hand rose and rested on him. That is more of like a benediction type thing, along the lines of along the lines of confession between Roger and Bree as well. So a lot of imagery and a lot of sadness, a lot, trauma coming not to an end. The physical trauma came to an end, but now it's the dealing with the aftermath of the physical healing and then the emotional and mental and psychological trauma healing that takes much longer.
And I feel bad for the show trying to find a delineation between the two, because clearly you can't address all the things, not physical and emotional. And I mean, I don't feel like they've even really dealt with Bree's emotional trauma from last season to this season. So, I mean, but I also feel like they're doing their best, right? So they're doing the best that they can. But because so many of the characters in the show have been violated in ways that are exacerbated by the continual and what feels like constant rape on the show, that it's hard to have any moment with any of the characters be more important than the others. So I guess kind of in that regard, we're prepared for Claire to have this moment because everyone else has already been raped. With the exception of Roger, who was just hung, right? He was just hung. So I don't know. I don't have enough recollection of what happens past this to be able to say that I'm super glad that we're done here. Now, I know it's not about worrying about that. It's just saying that I don't know that it gets worse than this. So in my brain, I'm hopeful that it doesn't get worse than this in this book. But clearly, there is at least 2 full thirds, if not 3/5 of this book left. So I'm trying to not feel safe. And clearly I shouldn't feel safe, but I feel like because this is where season 5 ended, that I should be able to feel safe for at least a couple chapters. Anywho.
And Lee M. closes us out with, Claire is still compartmentalizing. She feels naked and exposed, much as Jamie had 30 years before when his own personal fortress had been blasted by BJR. Claire wants Jamie to be able to forget what happened with BJR instead of being a reminder of his own rape and abuse. Jamie is crushed by the sight of Claire's battered face, but is prepared to do what he must. Jamie suggests that they should jump back in the saddle, not in those words. Claire can't imagine why such a thing would be necessary until Jamie suggests that it is needed because she could be pregnant. The show seems to have shied away from this sexual healing content. Episode 512 left them in bed together, but we don't know what, if anything, happened. Perhaps it is good that they avoided it in such an intense episode. Rape is such a hard subject to handle in a sensitive way, but the show has consistently missed out on a vital conversation point that the books have always tackled straight on. While Jamie may have been a Christ-like sacrificial offering in Outlander, they are one in their redemption in A Breath of Snow and Ashes. Quote, may your vow redeem me. Unquote. Claire is the atonement as well. My theology student's heart is happy. And in the afterglow, or whatever they are left with, the roof/ceiling is leaking. Now the show has the real world bleeding in. Not sure that is how the book paints it. It is more of a niggling reminder that all is not yet put to rights. Quote, how do you feel? Jamie asks Claire. Safe, is her reply. This ending gives me all the feels. What does it mean to be safe? Do any of us feel safe right now? Do we feel safer if we have someone to be with in the midst of chaos and its aftermath? Jamie is Claire's safety. I rather suspect she is his as well.
And that was chapter 29. Join us next week when we will continue the Our Breath of Snow and Ashes read along with chapter 30 entitled The Captive.
If you'd like to continue the conversation, join us at www.outlanderpod.com/group.
And again, a very special thanks to our co-producer, Tamara S. Find out more about how you can support us on Patreon and what it means to be a co-producer by visiting patreon.com/outlanderpod.
And if you're interested to have my art in your face or to be able to wear it and or drink coffee out of it, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.